So, one of the questions was, would I do it again? Would I do it again? In retrospect, would I do it again? If you take out the infinite factor, then for sure. I mean, until you experience, even though in theory I know everything gets on the internet nowadays, but until you actually experience it, you know, it's not really internalized. But otherwise, if you take it out, then for sure, I have no doubts. I would do it again because I thought it was important, and I still think it was important. The power of the internet to amplify and distort is really beyond belief until you've gone through it. And this is just a small taste. I know people, you know, who are out there in the world have experienced much, much more. That's a problem. That's a problem because that means we're really intimidated from speaking our minds. I think in theory the response the response collectively of the yeshiva, of the faculty, of the administration ought to be, when such a thing happens, to push back and to say, Mizebolir Doisenu Batoicha Batenu. We can't speak freely in our own yeshiva, then how are we supposed to function? I think that's really the proper response. I think that when a few years back, when there was this also a whole internet attack in the cops, launched by the commentator and then beyond, on Rav Shechter, for example, for taking down, there was a sign for a lecture on campus by a speaker that Rav Shechter thought did not belong in the yeshiva. And certainly he didn't think a sign about it belonged in the door of his Beis Medrash. So Rav Shechter took it down. And it was a whole day, Sakun, and commentator and so on. I think the right response should have been, rather than to go, oh, we can eat, and how are we going to prevent this from happening again, and so on, would have been to say just that the Rav Shechter is a shiva here, and it's his Beis Medrash, and he has a right to take down signs, and he's going to keep taking down signs until it stops being used. And that would have been the right response. Okay, I'm not sure if that's actually going to happen. So that needs to be thought. So now we have this new reality that everything has to be thought through. How's this going to be? How's it going to look on the internet? That's terrible. You know, that's really what it's going to be like when we're in. And it's going to be a very big problem. The good thing. Somebody asked me that. How is the Shabbaton on campus? How is the Shabbaton? How is that worse than? I know they said some event. I didn't know what it was.
Glow in the dark.
Yes, yeah, so I know what that was. But let's talk about something else. How is it worse, for example, than the fact that there are this socializing in the library every night? It's like, you know, how is the colored Shabbaton worse than that? So one answer is that it's cumulative. In other words, yeah, it was either or. I mean, I don't know which is worse. If there's a choice between the two, then I don't know that'll be worse. But that's for sure, that a college Shabbaton on campus plus the fact that there are girls in the library every night is certainly worse than just having girls in the library every night. But that's not even the main issue. Let's look at the main issue is this. And we could talk on two levels. We could talk on the theoretical level, Lashem Uluterosoi, you know, what the yeshiva is supposed to be, and what's the tzur of yeshiva, and then I installed a plush that the tzur of yeshiva is supposed to be. Look, there shouldn't be any socializing in the yeshiva at all. It's not a two different atmosphere. There's an atmosphere of socializing is one kind of atmosphere, and the atmosphere of yeshiva is something else. It doesn't even need to be explained. It's above a question in every yeshiva. In the same way, I don't think I need to explain why it wouldn't have been appropriate to have girls in the Eitzar Sfarim and Balazin. Then I don't think it should be needs to be explained why it's not appropriate in yeshiva here, if it's really yeshiva. And there was a time when it would have been inconceivable over here. In my father's time, I told you the story. My father was a bachur here in yeshiva. They there was no such thing, and then they asked to. And at one point, they wanted to, when the Drama Society, I told you the story, when the Drama Society put on their play, and the guys wanted to bring dates, and they went to the Rav, and the Rav said, and they asked him, is it appropriate in yeshiva? And the Rav said, it's a difficult shaila, he doesn't know, he never learned from yeshiva, he doesn't know what's appropriate in yeshiva, not they should ask their Dovid Lishitz. So, it's in yeshiva to have a, and that was the, and they didn't care, Dovid Lishitz said no. So that's for sure. On a theoretical level, if it's really, you know, if this was, you know, really an yeshiva, it's not, it doesn't belong. Okay, but on a realistic level, it's not, the yeshiva doesn't get its way in everything. I've said many times, besides the yeshiva, we have your yeshiva, but we have other things here as well, and we have the university. And even in theoretically, it's an Orthodox university, it's supposed to be an Orthodox university, but so there's tension, and there's all different constituencies among the students, and not every student comes here with the understanding that this is a yeshiva l'chol davar, and that has to take precedence. So we have this complicated reality with different constituencies among the students and different constituencies among the administration and among the supporters and so on. So now we're in a very complicated reality. So what do we do in such a complicated reality to keep things from exploding? How do we live b'shchinus in such a way that it shouldn't be a constant explosion? And I think the answer is that you don't change the status quo. There's a certain status quo. And you don't change the status quo unilaterally. One side doesn't change the status quo unilaterally without some kind of consensus from all of the stakeholders, and in particular without the input of the yeshiva. Yeshiva, meaning the Rosh Yeshiva, the administration of the yeshiva Sevim Yitzchak, and that's the core of this institution. And you don't make a change in the status quo, at least that, not to make a change in the status quo, without our input. I'll tell you something from my own experience. When I came to my shul 18 years ago, so we have a young Israel, but it's a changing demographic in Brooklyn, and part of the shul was old time in Israel people who had made the shul, affiliated the shul with Young Israel, and then with lots of people in the shul that were more grown up in Brooklyn yeshivas and were more shtibel kind of people, more Brooklyn what today is. If they had the druthers, it would have been a good and not a Young Israel. But everybody, so every now and then there was an issue. So every Yom HaAtzmaut was an issue. Yes, to say how, not to say how. Some people, was an issue. And it had the potential to be contentious, at least in Yom Kippur. At least on Yom HaAtzmaut, it was a sore point when people would sometimes leave, the Majid would leave, and so on. The meaning of the shul was to say how on Yom HaAtzmaut. So I got up the first Yom HaAtzmaut, and then for a number of Yom HaAtzmaut afterwards, and every now and then even I had a Yom HaZeh. And I said to them that, look, we have different people, and different people want different things. The way to have Shalom is to respect the status quo. It was the status quo of the shul that we say Halal and Yom HaAtzmaut. So if everybody in the shul would decide, it should be a wall-to-wall consensus, or close to wall-to-wall consensus, that they want to change it. So fine, so we would change it. And but if there's no consensus, as long as there are people in the shul who want to say Halal and Yom HaAtzmaut, then we don't change the status quo, because the status quo is not personal. See? The status quo is not insulting anybody, it's not alienating anybody, it's not against anybody. That's the status quo. It doesn't explode. The minute you say, no, this side is right, but that's, the minute you change the status quo, you made an explosion. And that's what we did, and everybody accepted that. And we've had really been Almei Menuchas. Part of the trick is I put my talus over my head and nobody knows what I'm doing, so that's the part. But that's an emes in life. A status quo is the point of departure to have shalom is to not to tamper with the status quo. What bothered me so much when I came here Wednesday morning and I heard what was going on was that it felt like, well, first of all, just to say, Dvarim Kaviyosim, there's a lie that's been promulgated in the pages of the commentator and all the responses, that Kilu, this Shabbaton was coordinated with Reeds and it was coordinated with the Rosh Yeshiva and with Rabbi and so on and so forth. That is not true. It's only half true. It's true that there was a Shabbaton that was planned and was coordinated with Rabbi Penner and with the Rosh Yeshiva input, including Rabbi Willig, including Rabbi Rosenzweig in Mount Sinai. That's true. That was planned. And it was explicitly stipulated by the Rosh Yeshiva were involved in the discussion that they don't agree that it should be here only if it's over there in Mount Sinai. And there were some other stipulations as well, which I'm not going to go into, because I don't entirely understand the structure of here. But they had some structural stipulations also. And then at the very, very last minute, it was changed to be right here in Schenck and in the MTA building and so on. But it was changed. Basically, that's on campus. On a nice day, it would spill over mamish into campus. On some mazel, it was a freezing cold day. But basically, that's called on campus, at least from my point of view. And that was against the stipulation. The agreement was not to have in Schenck. The agreement was not signing. And the last minute, it was changed to Schenck. And that I can tell you for sure, was done without any... Nobody asked anybody at Reeds whether that changed. That was just pushed. That was just done. And it was done in breach of an explicit understanding with those who the Rosh Yeshiva were involved with in the original conversation. So that seemed to me, still seems to me, like an attempt to change the status quo by making the fait accompli. Once it's a fait accompli, then that's it. Then it'll establish a precedent. We have a long-standing status quo. I don't know, it was 40 years ago. But as far as anybody remembers, we have a long-standing status quo here is not to have such a thing on Shabbat, not to have such an event. The agreement, the discussion with the Rosh Yeshiva, explicitly included in the agreement, not that it should not be here on campus. And it was at the last minute, and it was so much at the last minute that after I spoke Wednesday by Mincha, Rabbi Schwartz, who's the Rav in Mount Sinai, who came running over to me and said, "What's going on? I thought it was by me in the shul." It was so last minute that he didn't know that it had been changed. So that felt to me like it was something that was that they were pushing somebody, I don't know who, somebody was pushing for not reach, that's for sure, nobody reached. Somebody was pushing through to try to make a fake accomplice. At least that's how it, maybe it was lack of communication. I don't know, to me it felt like bad faith, I can't say for sure, that it was bad faith, maybe it was just miscommunication. But al kapanim, it was for sure that the change was done. Certainly everybody understood that it's a change, that it's something new. It hasn't been done in anybody's memory. So they certainly knew, it wasn't just, you know, they served the wrong course at supper or something. It certainly everybody knew they were doing something, it's a consequential thing. And nobody thought that anybody at reach has to be consulted. So I thought that's a terrible thing. That means you're changing the status quo and then aim it over sight. Because if that's true, you can make changes that affect the character of the yeshiva, the religious complexion of the yeshiva, the yeshiva complexion of the yeshiva. You can just do things like that without a prior lead, without any consultation with the yeshiva and with the Rosh Yeshiva. And the Rosh Yeshiva don't have your institutional authority, but the Rosh Yeshiva, but there's a big segment of the Talmidim who come here to learn Torah from their Rebbeim, and who trust their Rebbeim to make the guidelines for what's acceptable for yeshiva. It's you're ignoring a big part of not only the Rosh Yeshiva, but you're ignoring I don't know if it's half, whatever it is, you're ignoring a huge section of the Talmidim here by ignoring their wishes and making this unilateral change to the status quo. And the same way, if there would be a group of Talmidim here or Rebbeim who would try to make the library at night off limits to unilaterally without consulting with anybody, make it off limits to women at night. So there would also be a tumult. There would be a bigger explosion of the commentator, I would imagine. I mean, there would be a very big explosion. Maybe it would be worth it. I don't know. But you can't do that. I mean, obviously you can't do that. Maybe the administration should do that. But then they would have a big explosion if they would be willing to be disable such an explosion. I don't know what happened. I don't know. Maybe the Holy Yeshiva would go under if they did such a thing. So I'm not saying, I don't know. But Akoponim, that I know for sure. They don't make that if the side that wants to make this place less of a yeshiva can make changes to that effect without any consultation with the yeshiva, with the Rosh Yeshiva, with anybody it reads, from top to bottom, so then it's a very bad situation. And I thought, therefore, my first reaction was that if it's not going to be a fait accompli, there has to be a macha. Or if there will be a macha, a significant macha, then that will mean that it's not a fait accompli. So that's why I thought this. And I'll tell you the whole of Halef, because obviously I would have much rather that it should be all the Rosh Yeshiva together and we should hammer out something together. But it was just didn't feel like with the Chdei Sheyasim. I came here Wednesday morning. I came here 12 o'clock on Wednesday. On the train, I got them the text about this. This was one of the quick Q&A questions, which was come in like on the train to Hawaii. Maybe this should come a little bit earlier. Yeah, if this question would have come in earlier, maybe it would have been much better. So I got to yeshiva, and the first person I met was Rabbi Neuberger, and he didn't know anything about it. And his reaction also was, maybe we should get their yeshivas together and tell guys to stay home. So we went around looking to find other rabbis, but it was 12 o'clock Wednesday afternoon. Nobody was around. We couldn't find anybody, so we separated. Then I spoke to her. I spoke to Rabbi Penner just to find out what are the facts on the ground. And from him, I got the facts of what's happening. Then I met Rabbi Willard. And I said to Rabbi, and Rabbi Willard was very, he knew about it, he was very upset. And he said that we're going to have to, it's too late to change it. It's my last minute. We can't change it back to Mount Sinai. It's not possible. So after Shabbos, we're going to have a get together and have a meeting how to proceed. So I said, maybe you shouldn't wait till after Shabbos, and then somebody should give a clap by Mincha and say the guy should stay away. Should stay away. I don't remember exactly the language that I used. And I said, I'm willing to do it. So we're willing with Maskin. So now, the MS is, we had a miscommunication, because his understanding was that I was going to say that guy should stay away from the COVID event. And I meant to stay away for Shabbos entirely. If he had a shita not to stay away from yeshiva, you know, but he had a shita, why that would be better. I thought it's better this way. I still think it's better this way, because then it's not, that's not a macha. I thought there had to be a macha. It shouldn't be a fait accompli. I don't think that the commentator would have made a difference. You know, if I would have given him a clap on the standard that guys should boycott, not go to the event, not go to any of the co-ed events on campus. So the commentator, that they would have, I think to them would be the same thing. Rosh Yeshiva urges male students to boycott the co-ed event. You all would be, there, would be the same headline. So and my thinking was, look, I don't have enough time to we don't, there's not enough time here to, guys are making plans for Shabbos and so on. It didn't seem to me there was enough time to do anything. So, and I said only in my own name. I didn't say anybody else's name. I don't know how many guys were there. But I think that they reported accurately. I said, I'm only speaking my own name. This is what I told my Talmidim. And you should ask your Rebbe. But I felt that way, I'm going to, if I can't call all the Yeshivas, we don't can't get a meeting together, this way at least every Yeshiva will be asked the Shaila, and everybody also will say whatever they think. That was my response. So the Etzem, I still hope that was, had a positive effect, in that there was a macha, guys did stay away. And I'm talking hopeful that maybe that had perhaps the effect of it not being a fait accompli. Certainly there was enough tumult, they'll think twice before they do it again, maybe. But anyway, that's it. I think the principle here is a very, very important principle. You know, the principle is, it's not right to have such a thing in yeshiva. There are other things that happen here that are also not right to have in yeshiva, but those are already here for a very long time, and they're entrenched. And I also recognize that there's other constituencies here besides the what we call the Bnei Yeshiva. Even though people get very upset when I use the term Bnei Yeshiva, not everybody here is a Bnei Yeshiva. But by Bnei Yeshiva, I mean the people who have come to this yeshiva with the understanding that they want to be mekabel for their Rebbe and not mikvei for their Rebbe. And so, but there's other constituencies. There's other. So I understand that things that are here already that are entrenched can't change. But if there's going to be a move to make changes without the haskama of the Rosh Yeshiva or of Reitz, or I mean, basically means the Rosh Yeshiva. You know, the Penner doesn't do things without consulting with the Rosh Yeshiva. So if there's going to be an attempt to change the complexion of the yeshiva without the scum of the Rosh Yeshiva, then I think we're going to be in, it's going to be very very contentious. I don't think it'll be good for YU, such a kind of situation. It'll be a Habsian kind of Ish Israel Chaim Beloit. So that's it. So that was my feeling then, and it's still my feeling. The experience wasn't so pleasant, and I have to be marked about that, but nonetheless, I think the thinking was basically correct.
Is there a meeting to see if there should be a response letter?
Not yet. Not holding my breath, but not yet. Not yet. I mean, I imagine... No, I take that back. You know, I don't want to even address it. Because the emphasis of the situation is even more complicated, but not everything that I want to address it. Okay. Okay, now I want to talk about the really explosive.